Tuesday, everyone. This is Melissa Billiard, your host, and tonight is the Ask Dr. Goodman Show. We're going to talk about aggression in Huntington's tonight. It's a really important subject. A lot of us are dealing with this. But our call-in numbers, if you want to call in, ask questions, call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 or 877-497-4103. When you call in, press 1, we'll cue you into the show. You can also type your questions into the chat room when you log on to Blog Talk Radio. And I'll be looking for questions through my Facebook and email during the show because I know a lot of people are very curious about this subject. And a lot of us don't have the tools or the skills to deal with it. So Dr. Goodman's here with us tonight to talk about aggression and Huntington's disease. And she's written an article. Dr. Goodman, welcome to the show. And thanks for this article. It's a great article. How are you tonight?
Sure. I am good.
Good. So,
Seahawks
lost,
aggression. But otherwise I'm good.
So aggression is something that we all kind of deal with. Some people don't, but I think the majority have to deal with this, right?
Yeah, I think it's important to know what we're saying when we say aggression. You know, it carries with it pretty heavy weight that frightens us. The word does. I think if we tend to think of aggression as an expression of frustration, you know, for the majority of people, whether it's people with Huntington's or people without, if we think of it in less charged terms, that it is an expression of frustration. It's, you know, it's an unpleasant one, unpleasant for the person involved and also the person who's at the other end of it. But if we think of aggression as an, you know, as different degrees of an expression of frustration, it helps us, I think, understand it a little bit better. With Huntington's, of course, the ability to perform tasks and things that you used to be able to do, you know, buttoning your shirt. And then you have difficulty doing it, you get frustrated, and then you can get angry about it. There are different reactions that one can have. You can get sad and burst into tears, or you can get frustrated and, you know, hit the table beside you. And if someone comes in, you might... in the room at that time, you might shove them or something. So it's different when people lose the ability to control aspects of their lives, to communicate, to walk, to talk, to do the tasks and to think also as quickly, to be unable to think as quickly as they used to, and to respond, for instance, to a question. So if we start thinking about, well, why is this behavior happening, instead of fearing it, you know, of course, fear, we don't like to have things happen that put us at, you know, risk in any way. And that's uncomfortable, you know. Any type of aggression, whatever level, is uncomfortable. And so we have to deal with issues on both sides, the discomfort that's felt both by the person who is affected by Huntington's directly and those who care for them and love them, but also get frustrated by their behaviors too. There, that's my diatribe for the day.
Right. It's sometimes a little bit of a knee-jerk reaction when there is aggressive or aggression behaviors to kind of react to it and not kind of let it expire, you know?
So
does that make sense?
Cool down and then go back and visit the question, yes.
Mm-hmm. So what are some of your tricks on that? I mean, how do we do that and not escalate the aggression?
Well, Well, I think while it's happening, if it is not, you know, a threat to that person, to anyone involved, either the person themselves or the care partner, the best thing to do is to just let it cool down. Walk away, if possible. Have that person be in a safe and quiet place, and give it some time to calm, you know, to abate. Confronting a person right then and trying to rationalize about why they're angry will escalate behavior. So even if we feel we're justified, either the person with Huntington's or the person reacting as care partner, right in the middle of it is not the time to discuss it. It is to let it cool down first. Of course, if there is a threat of violence to that person or the care partner, then 911 is what you do. Safety is always first, needs to be done. And whether or not there will be the response that you think appropriate or that we think appropriate with 911, it still is a necessary precaution to take, because things may have all quieted down by the time a 911 person comes.
Exactly.
And quieting down is what we want.
Of course.
But staying safe, whether things quiet down or they don't, is the most important thing if there seems to be a threat to, or you interpret it as a threat to that person themselves, of harming themselves or a care partner. But lesser than that, I think the first thing to do is to back away if possible, to not confront, and to allow that person to calm down first, and then try to figure out what triggered it. Because prevention is always better than reaction.
Right.
There's often a reason why someone becomes frustrated. You know, think of ourselves. We get frustrated because things happen that we don't like, or that bother us, or bring us discomfort. So the same thing applies to a person with Huntington's. Sometimes trying to figure out what that is a little more difficult. That person may not be able to communicate as well or communicate directly, or they may not be so sure what's causing the problem themselves. So sometimes it takes time. There's so many different things. I was at a research symposium in the Puget Sound area on Saturday, and Jimmy Pollard, one of his very favorite people, spoke, and he just has some wonderful insight about when we talk with people with Huntington's, we forget in the rapid pace of our lives and our conversation. We forget to slow down. You know, we might ask a question or give a direction, and then we don't wait for an answer.
Mm-hmm.
We don't wait until they're able to process what we've said and be able to respond. And when we don't do that, it's frustrating for that person.
Mm-hmm.
If
mm-hmm.
you shut them off, assuming that they have nothing to say. And boy,
right.
we do that. I'm doing it right now with you, yes? doctors do it all the time, whether a person has Huntington's or not. We're in our office and the patient isn't allowed to speak. We ask them what's wrong and we don't wait for the answer. And so think of have the care partner think of themselves as the doctor who's not letting the patient talk. Slow down and let it, whatever needs to be said or felt, give time for it to get out.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's important. It's important for caretakers, I think, care partners to think about before there's something like this, before there is an aggressive or an irritable or an anger or whatever word one wants to use for it due to a frustrating event, you know, how are you going to handle this? And work out with your person and say, when this happens, I think this is what we should do.
Mm-hmm.
So until we calm down. So have a plan and then follow that plan and then say, after things have calmed down, we'll go back and try to figure this out. And have a plan for how to deal with frustration, whatever it is. But make sure that there's a follow through with that.
It's kind of like, yes, it's developing communication skills with your person who's, you know, having
let
aggression.
Them in on it
issues.
And let them be part of the solution. Say, you know, these things when at a quiet time that these things are happening, and you know, this is how I think we might should deal with it, but get their input too and give them the chance and time to answer. And then put it into play for future events.
Mm-hmm. Your article's very interesting, and you talk about aggressive behaviors between 22% for clinical patients and 66% for hospitalized patients. Why is it different? Why is it so different?
Well, I mean, people who are hospitalized are people who usually have behavior problems. I mean, that's why they're hospitalized. I mean, if you're hospitalized due to Huntington's, the most common reason, I mean, is really for hostile acts or for psychosis. So behavior problems that can result in aggressive behaviors, whether that's alcohol related, whether it's related to psychosis or psychotic symptoms. You know, other symptoms can go along with aggression, can go along with anger. In the more serious expressions of aggression, it tends to be in those individuals who also have psychosis or severe obsessive-compulsive behaviors, which can become look a lot like psychosis sometimes. And it usually happens in those people, of course, who have more cognitive impairment. So their perceptions are not always accurate. So their perceptions of what are happening to them become something that the person with Huntington's wants to get away from and wants to fight with. And I didn't express that very well. But the higher amount in hospitalized or institutionalized patients, it's kind of a vicious cycle. The
mm-hmm.
person who
yep.
who gets sent to the hospital is the person who is more likely to be aggressive than someone who isn't. So you have a bias of selection for the kind of patient, the kind of person that you're going to be seeing there. The same thing with schizophrenia or with alcoholism. You don't see a person with alcoholism being admitted to the hospital or hospitalized unless there's some significant problem associated
mm-hmm.
with it. So that's why it's much higher. You know, people in aggressive behaviors are what get people institutionalized. So of course there's going to be more aggression reported in that hospital, in that population of people, as opposed to your average, that if there is such a thing, an average Huntington's patient who is seen in a clinic. And remember that aggression, how the experts define it, and how when individuals go to have a, you know, an enroll visit, or a clinical trial visit, when one goes through the behavioral scale, you know, aggression can be because you yelled at someone. It can be something as, you know, you hit your fist on the table because, you know, you spilled your milk. That is an aggressive behavior. So that doesn't mean that you have to hit someone or shoot someone or do things like that to be classified as aggressive behavior.
Mm-hmm. So the difference between
we all interpret the word. It's you know how when we hear the word aggression, I think most of us tend to think of things that are more violent than most of the aggression that happens with Huntington's, individuals with Huntington's or other illnesses where people become very frustrated with what they can't do anymore. It happens in Alzheimer's. It happens in Parkinson's. They find more aggression in people who fall. Well, why is that? Well, that's because people cannot do what they used to do and they get frustrated. So it's a combination of, you know, cognitive, motor impairments, the frustrations of living with the difficulty, the hardships of living with this disease are frustrating. And it comes out, unfortunately, with care partners because that's who is there.
I wonder if there's a way to decrease the
empathetic to people with Huntington's as opposed to care partners. It's coming across that way, and I don't want it, and that's not right. There is, you know, the person with Huntington's does not walk in the shoes of the care partner and vice versa.
Right.
And
right.
One has to feel for each one because the pain, the suffering that happens with each one on the other side of the door is important and equal in the sense that we can't walk in each other's shoes. It hurts no matter which side of the door you're on.
I think the person that is affected by Huntington's doesn't have the same ability to manage these stresses and frustrations. Do you think that's a true statement?
I think that's true, but the stresses and frustrations of the care partner whose life is also limited. Life possibilities are also limited. Are dealing with a lot of frustrations as well. And I'm not underestimating those at all. I hope not. I mean, I hope not to underestimate those. Each of them are hard and filled with loss and frustration. So empathy for both sides and each of those persons within a relationship having empathy for each other as much as possible is important. I believe people with Huntington's do have empathy, but are less capable of showing it, expressing it.
Mm-hmm.
So our assumption is sometimes that it isn't there. No, and maybe in some cases it isn't there as much as it used to be. But a lot of it, of our perception of lack of empathy, is because they can't, it's much harder to express it. And it takes them longer to express it.
And you also stated that it's more frequently in men, the aggressive behaviors. In early and middle stages,
and I think
so that's
when there's more capability. If you look at that, well, why is that? Well, early and middle stages are undergoing, in some ways, greater losses. Losses in of relationships, of jobs, of, you know, being able to be the man, bring home the bacon, be the responsible person. Women more often tend to be depressed, just as an average, I mean, as a majority. Women tend to express their you know, frustrations, their losses in sadness and depression. And men, in general, you know, everybody's different. In general, more men tend to express it in frustration and more aggressive types of behaviors. I think it's just the way men and women sometimes are.
Yeah, certainly.
There can be more aggressive behaviors in women and depressive behaviors in men, too. So it's just when you do these studies, you look at, you know, statistics, you look at who does, where do you see it most, but that doesn't mean anything for the individual with these symptoms. Each individual is different.
You talked a little bit about criminal behavior as well. JAMA Neurology. I don't know that publication, but...
Well, it was a very small number of individuals with Huntington's, first of all. And the behaviors... included, you know, things like drunken driving or drunkenness things like that, not killing someone, not shooting someone, not hitting someone. It was more associated with behaviors related to alcohol and driving under the influence. Which is in aggressive behaviors in the general population. Alcohol is the most common factor involved in aggressive behaviors and murder and rape in the general population. And alcohol is something that people turn to when they're frustrated. So while there is violent behavior, and we hear about that in, you know, newspaper reports and headlines, it does not appear to happen more frequently in Huntington's than it does in very much higher than in the general population. Even though our perception is different, even though our perceptions are different.
So how do we cope with these aggressive behaviors? What is your best recommendation?
To do our best first to understand them. I mean, if we want to lessen their impact, you know, decrease the impact and the discomfort that we are feeling and that our individuals with Huntington's are feeling, we have to go back, I think, to the beginning and try to understand them. You know, why is this happening? Not just be angry that it's happening or upset. You know, angry is not a word that I'm there's no judgment there. We're upset about this behavior. And when we get upset, we sometimes get angry. But I'm talking about upsetness. If we want to, I think there are two pathways. There are three pathways. If it's a serious, severe threat, then you get help. If it is less than that, you do your best to step away. Now, will that person follow you? Yes, but just keep going. You know, go behind the door and close it. But trying to de-escalate the situation and give it time, more time in the person affected by Huntington's in their brain to turn off
mm-hmm.
the upsetment feeling. It takes longer. It's harder. So that's the reason for a cool down period. And do not attempt to rationalize in the middle of an argument. It just won't work.
Right.
It doesn't
right.
work with individuals who don't have Huntington. So the first thing to do is to de-escalate either by walking away or distracting. You know, can I bring you, letting things calm down and then maybe bringing a cookie or some way of moving the brain over to something else. Distraction.
A peace offering.
a peace offering is something that is distracting. Something that brings them pleasure will be distracting. I mean, what do we do? You know, when you're sitting down across from a friend and you have a difference of opinion, you don't. You hopefully will go on to a different conversation, and then come back to it at some point, or not. You know, so it's not so different a behavior than with someone who doesn't have Huntington. Dealing with whatever causing them discomfort. Now, you can't make it so that a person can button their shirt when they're having difficulties with it right then, but you can start using things like Velcro or pullovers or something that mm-hmm. doesn't involve little buttons. So there are things that one can do to maybe make whatever it was that they were having difficulty with easier. Things like that. And I think one of the most important things is giving the person, this is not during a spell of upsetment, but following it. Giving the person time to think over something and respond. Now, often everyone will get upset if you give too many instructions too fast.
Right.
You know, you're in the car and you're wanting and you're lost and you want that person to, look something up and on the map and tell them where you are and what you should do. So when there is, a stressful situation like that, the better thing to do is to pull off the side of the road and look together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just giving kind of some examples. You can't always pull off the side of the road, but you don't push that person. You don't
mm-hmm.
push them to a point where they feel like they can't do it, and the only way to avoid more stress is to strike out
mm-hmm.
at someone or something else. So sometimes we just put too much on individuals.
And sometimes those things that we try to put on them, it may not seem difficult for us, but it may be difficult for them. So then that causes more frustration. Yeah.
And one has to look at each incident and be a detective and go back and see what might have triggered it, the behavior, and see if they're, and then trying to correct for that. Now, of course, we're mm-hmm. always doing that because, one correction doesn't take care of the next thing. But it gives us a way of dealing with it, a way of thinking about it so we can solve more quickly, perhaps, or efficiently the next time. Good sleep is terribly important, and getting people back into a good circadian rhythm. Sleep deprivation turns us all into not very happy people who can turn violent,
right.
all the way to violence.
Monsters.
So, monsters, yeah. So sleep No, good sleep, circadian rhythm is very important. So, and of course, there are medications that can help prevent some of these escalations. And I'm a pill pusher being a doctor, but before you do that, and even if you do that, these behavioral things are terribly important, or wonderfully important, and they don't give you side effects. So.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about asking for education about aggression and other symptoms of HD. Would that be from a psychiatrist or?
I think from whomever in your area who can give you an answer. You know, that can be a social worker. Very good social workers know a great deal about behaviors in Huntington's disease. So do psychiatrists. We tend to medicalize the symptoms and define them in different ways. Certainly talking with other people in support groups who have dealt with some of these things and feelings before is very helpful. You know, it's being on the front lines helps you help someone else who's on the front lines if you've dealt with something successfully, even part of the time. And you know, that's the way life is. We only deal with things successfully part of the time. Right?
Right. What about, counseling? Could that be of help? Or?
Of course. I mean, it depends on the person who's giving you the information. And you can have a person in support group who gives you information that's not helpful and mean. Or you could have, you know, you can have a doctor who doesn't believe in finding trigger points and just pushing medicine. So it's not so much the professional or personal name of the person giving you help. It's also how good they are, how sensitive they are, how much they know about Huntington's and loss. So I'm not answering your question, but I think that there are good people in a number of places.
Right.
And certainly our centers of excellence, your Huntington's expert communities deal with this.
Social workers, nurse practitioners.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. They're excellent.
And families. I think sometimes the support groups online can be, one has to be a little bit careful about information, I think, given there. While it can be very supportive, it can also be misleading if you're getting a bias from one person. Now, when you have one doctor, you get a bias from that person, too. But hopefully that doctor will also be able to tell you about other patients and that nothing is 100% here. Good advice comes from many sources and so does bad.
Right. I think it helps too if you have, like you said, a connection with social workers that are working with Huntington's. Our social worker is amazing and she's always been able to help us figure these things out.
Right.
And it's because she understands Huntington's, she understands Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, you know, the different dementia type illnesses, and how to de-escalate.
They have, counseling.
They're trained to do that.
They're trained, and they are learn a lot about clinical medicine. And how to deal with clinical things, and it's in a more holistic way than doctors do, or that doctors take the time for usually. So it's a very good source for support
and
for information.
Some of the medications that are used are the anxiety and antidepressant medications.
The SSRI antidepressants help is really the first course, first type of drug that in most cases is recommended, is advised, and that's because it's of its effects on a number of things, on depression, anxiety, obsessive compulsive or perseverative behaviors. It calms irritability. There's evidence that it really helps with irritability, and if you can help with irritability, then it often will not escalate to the more aggressive or severe behaviors. So prevention is important. Prevention both with our behavioral modification things or trying to understand. You know, behavioral modification is a big word, big term, but
right.
It's trying to understand that person and change things to make it better. That's behavioral modification. And, of course, there are medications that are helpful, too. And always, unless there's some specific, you know, reason why not, always start with one of the SSRI antidepressants.
Mm-hmm. Now, yes. You also talk about aggression and substance abuse a little bit. That seems to be one of the hardest scenarios, right?
Well, it's very, very hard to treat aggressive behaviors in anyone who is addicted to mind-altering drugs, whether that be alcohol or other drugs. And it's whether that person has Huntington's or not, it just makes it almost impossible to deal. We throw our hands up a little bit because it's, you know, I throw my hands up when that happens, realizing that there's, unfortunately, what you need to address is the substance abuse and change it. And, of course, that's very hard. Not impossible, but if you don't change the abusive pattern, you're unlikely to change the aggressive one. A vicious cycle.
Is there a lot of substance abuse in this disease
in
state?
Huntington's?
Uh-huh.
I think it's easy. It is not so uncommon for people to turn to alcohol.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's one can access that fairly easily, and you know, of course, in my generation, I'm an old person. So we didn't have drugs in high school when I was there. I think that's fair to say. In college there was marijuana, but I don't remember it in high school. I'm that old.
Yeah.
So there's more access to drugs now. So is it becoming more of a problem with our Huntington's individuals with Huntington's? I don't think so, but I don't know. I think alcohol is, you know, easier to access.
Do you think there's a physiological reason for that? Or,
I mean,
are they depleted of something that they're looking for?
I don't know the answer to that for sure, but I believe that when people are upset, more people, if they lose their job, in any circumstance there's of being poor, relationship problems, alcohol is turned to. And I think that happens in Huntington's because it's a younger age group that's affected. Alcohol is available, and it's calming. You feel good on it for a while.
And
feeling good is... Yeah, temporarily, yeah.
Right.
So I think alcohol is a real problem with Huntington's disease, as it is with many others. Schizophrenia, I don't think it's unique to Huntington's is what I'm saying.
It might be more difficult for them to turn away from that, though.
Surely.
Yeah. Wow. Good information. So bottom line, you have bottom line here. Get educated. This is important to educate yourself about this
right.
particular.
And also to educate, when I say educate, learn about how it is in your household with that person.
Mm-hmm.
Learn about situations. When I say educate yourself, I don't mean, you know, you have to go online and read up on aggression.
Right.
You also need to benefit from looking at your individual situation, which is different than everybody else's, and learn what you can within it.
Mm-hmm. Develop
that
skills
too.
That can help you with your own situation.
Right. Learn from others, but also trust yourself that you can. There are some things, you can't do everything about it, but there are some things that can be done to maybe lessen the load so you won't be so burdened.
Yeah,
what
may work for one person is not going to work for another, so it's kind of...
That's correct, but the technique of trying to figure out what it is a
mm-hmm.
technique that we should all learn. You know, is it because, you know, the person in who may be in a nursing home or and they're screaming and they're hitting at, you know, striking out, maybe it's because they're in pain.
Right.
Maybe it's because they're constipated. Maybe it's because they're hungry. You know, one common cause of irritability is that a person, particularly in later stages of disease, they don't feel hunger the same way or pain the same way. Those
mm-hmm.
sensations, something's wrong, and the discomfort, you kind of lash out, but you don't know why. The person is not able to tell you why. And often, particularly with increased calorie needs for people with more advanced disease, hunger,
mm-hmm.
something as simple as, we think it's simple, but it isn't so simple. If you're hungry,
mm-hmm.
you get irritable, right?
Yeah,
you haven't eaten
definitely.
In a while, you get irritable. And if you don't have the same sensation of hunger, we know what hunger feels like, but let's say you have
mm-hmm.
Huntington's and you don't know what hunger feels like, but you're hungry.
Mm-hmm.
You need something to eat, in other words. So they're troubleshooting, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Being a detective, why is this happening? When you have time to go back and think
about
it.
It's kind of like when you bring that new baby home, and the baby's crying and you don't know why.
Exactly.
Trying
it's
to
very
investigate.
Similar, only except your individual is bigger now.
Right. Oh, my goodness. Well, good stuff. Good information. Dr. Goodman, you always bring us all the right stuff. So thank you very much.
Some of the right stuff, but not all of it.
Well, I'm biased on that, so...
Well,
just so appreciate you coming on the show every month to help us out. Thank you so much. We have upcoming shows. We have one upcoming show in March. We have another show this Thursday, actually. Doug Michael and Trey Gray will be on. It's going to be a really good show. Doug Michael is best friend of Trey Gray, and they've been in the music business for years and years, friends since teenagers. Doug is doing a bike tour for Huntington's disease. Trey was diagnosed in 2003 with Huntington's, and he's a famous drummer for Brooks and Dunn, Faith Hill, some other famous musicians. And so they're going to be on the show this Thursday. It'll be fun to talk with them and find out what they're doing for advocacy and raising money for research for Vanderbilt University, which is kind of interesting. And then on March 10, Missouri Cures Education Foundation will be on. Margaret Rose Tollerton will be on. So that's going to be a good show. And Dr. Goodman, again, you are so amazing. Thank you so much. And this concludes our show for tonight. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And don't forget to tell your colleagues, friends, and family about Help for HD Radio. And visit us on our website, helpforhd.org, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, all that good stuff. Thank you, everyone. Good night, and thanks for tuning in. LaVon, I'll talk to you just for a second. Take care.